Brad, I think I need a rack.
Are you sure you're ready to take your first step into this world?
Look, I need to rewire my desk again because my headphone microphone is picking up noise from something, and I've moved the cable as much as I can, and I can't figure out where it's coming from. So I think the only solution for this is a rack.
You know what they say, don't build out, build up, right?
Look, I could put the stream PC in there. I could put the audio mixer in there. I could put the headphone amplifier in there. I could get a compressor. Like, there's a rack is a world of possibility.
How many U's are you thinking?
I think probably like 16, maybe at most.
Come on, man.
What?
42 U or bust.
Look, my floor can't support 42 U's.
Maybe you just don't want it bad enough.
I mean, I could reinforce the floor.
What if we brought in an expert opinion on rack mounts? Maybe we could get a little hands-on studio experience.
Is that my cue? Is that my cue? Am I ready to racked and loaded, baby? Here we go.
Dude, your family. You get to talk whenever you want.
Oh, okay. I was doing the thing. Like, don't talk until the, I get the intro. I have three racks in this basement.
Three racks?
I've got my networking rack, which is mounted to a wall. I've got my floor rack, which has my NAS and my universal power supply. And then my desk that I have has one RU units for compressors and stuff on it.
God, I didn't know you had a network rack.
I have Holy a network. Shit. I've got a Netgear 24 port rack switch mounted to my desk. How cool is that?
Wow.
Did you rack the edge router? Did you get the little faceplate?
Yes.
You
of
did?
Course
what?
I did. Man. That's the whole reason to buy a rack mount is so that you get the ears for everything. And then you start.
The whole reason to have a house, as far as I'm concerned, is just to put your rack in.
That edge router is like a quarter of the length of a width of a rack, and now it sits in an enclosure, a little hug of
a
rack.
It's so ridiculous.
It's so small. Of course I racked it.
Oh, that's incredible.
I looked the other day at like laser cut plans to make a rack mount for like four pies. Like you can just build a platform that you screw them into, and then you have the wires coming out of the front on extenders. So you can have like four pies that are just all the ports are on the front. And I'm like, I've never wanted anything more than this. This looks really fun.
Get your pie hole in there and your nut server in there and your
the problem with having a rack, I'm gonna tell you, is you wanna fill it. So like you want more rack, you'll be like, if you get yourself a 24 or you get yourself, you know, one of the big monsters, you're going to be like, I need more rack servers. I don't know why, but I just need more computers to put. What else can I put in this rack? Because it's too empty in here. You'll just want everything forever.
I've never had more basement envy than talking to you, Vinny. Like living in California, a basement is an unattainable dream. And like just having like a room, like having that extra room seems really good.
Well, let me help you out here for a second. If you say your toilet overflows,
yeah,
where does that water go in your house?
Into the kitchen.
Okay. Oh, is it upstairs?
We only have one floor.
Okay, so if the toilet overflows, where does it go when it seeps through the floor?
Crawl space. So then it smells up the whole house.
So imagine that stuff all falling into your basement where your server is, or on your head.
I mean, that's just gravity,
because there's nowhere else for it to go at that point. You're underneath the house now in the kids. Something happening up there. What's up? It's got real stinky in here real quick.
I'm jealous of your 24 port switch, but I didn't think to ask how it smells.
It's fine. You can disinfect things. You clean them. It was a, you learn where everything is in the upstairs pretty quickly. Okay. This needs to move. This is this is underneath the sink. This is underneath the toilet. Didn't realize that, but here we go.
Never, never, never put your rack under the toilet.
No.
Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
I wanted to introduce you, as with me as always is Garth this week, Brad, because of your incredible mane.
I had some reservations about putting that out on the internet for all time, as I learned minutes later. The internet is forever.
Yeah, you knew that already.
No matter how old your video reviews are, they never go away.
With us this week, Vinny Caravella, who is one of my favorite human beings in the world.
Mine too.
Recently unemployed, it turns out. Hello, Vincenzo. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for the kind words. You guys are some of my favorites as well. It's just like, you know, doing this podcast here. It's only been a decade. It's been a long time. It's you know, whether we're at home and offices in California, some things never change. Good people and good podcasting.
Yeah,
that's right. I mean, what are we like plus 18 hours from the last internet content that we produced together?
Not, if even that, I don't know, probably not. Probably
and,
not.
We are now jobless, and yet here we are. Podcasts, I just can't quit you.
Thank you guys for taking your first day off of work in like 20 years and like sleeping in until, you know, the ungodly hour at which we started. Well, Vinny, you're on the East Coast, so you've been up for a day now. But like, yeah, Brad, thanks for getting up early to record the podcast. My stuff's busy today.
This is great. I feel like I'm like, this is amazing. I haven't had this in a long time. I feel like I'm some kind of like podcast Ronin or something. I'm just kind of going around. I can go wherever I want.
You're just a knight errant, just roaming the land, doing good deeds for the peasantry.
what are we talking about here?
No masters, Vinny Caravella.
What do you do here? You restore old Matchbox cars? Sure, I'll sit down and talk about that for a while. How do you get the paint job on those? That's amazing. Hey, you got to rebuild the motorcycle? Can I sit in on that? That's cool. Yeah.
What do you know about the 5994?
How do you make asphalt? Let's talk about it. Let's get in there.
Have you watched that Tool Refinishing channel?
I have watched a lot of refinishing channels, but maybe. So maybe.
Okay. There's a lot of them at this point.
I love watching YouTube videos of people who shoot something beautifully. Okay. I have watched enough to really want to get into nickel plating in my basement or outside to be like, okay, look, everybody looks like they just got like a marine battery or a car battery, a hunk of nickel. I could do this. We could do this. I've got at least two power supplies that I use in my electronic setup. Let's do it, baby.
I mean, at that point, you're basically just performing alchemy, right? Like you're dipping something into a liquid and then applying electricity and then magic comes out.
Liquids are bad and you end up with soluble metals and those are bad. You do not want to do this, Vinny.
Let's do it. So there's a lot of sodium, I don't know, stuff that hydrochloric acid, I've heard that's bad, but like, listen, we'll get in there. You put one metal in and then you put electricity in and it goes on the other metal. And that's,
did you watch the, I sent you a video a few months ago of a guy restoring an old 60s Soviet motorcycle.
That was a lot of chemicals.
That was the thing I came out of that. Like it was an amazing, like kind of machine shop he had going there, but it was the chemicals that I came out. Like he was using like linseed oil at one point and he was like mixing.
That's fine. There's this that just has the triple X's on it that you need to stay away from.
So it was a real scary looking. Like he stuck the dipper in there and I expected it to just like melt off, right?
We have some people in the Discord and in my Twitch community who like work in like fab wafer manufacturer, and the chemicals that he talks about, like he talks about having cryogenic hydrofluoric acid, which is maybe the scariest combination of words I've ever heard, because like hydrofluoric acid is one of those ones that like it just reacts with everything, like glass, like silicone, anything you put it with, it's going to do bad things to. And I just don't want anything to do with that stuff. It's really scary. So,
but you hit a point, you know, in having old stuff around, old tools, old metal things, where you're like, you know, the next step is getting a sandblaster and then replating this thing, because the nickel chips on this old thing that I happen to have in a drawer and I'm old. And is somebody going to throw me away? No, replate me.
There's something kind of romantic about that to me of like, you know what, like the original tool, you know, stuff made out of metal, like stuff that has worked and manufactured really well. It's like the original tool is still under there, you know, like it might be rusted. It might be a little creaky, but like that thing can be what it once was again, if you just put a little elbow grease into it.
Well, it's one of those things like when we used to talk about this with Adam on Still Entitled, but like the old machine shop stuff, like the old lathes and old mills and stuff like that, there's a robust ecosystem of like bolting on CNC things and machine and like modern super precise digital tooling so that you can control these old analog like 50-year-old mills and lathes, but with like digital precision, and those are it's fantastic. There's no downside.
the earliest sign that we had assembled a cool community of people on our Discord was when I saw a guy talking about 3D printing a replacement part for his washing machine.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow. A 3D printer is actually a practical tool if you know what you're doing. It's like, you're not sitting there making like figurines of Goku. You're fixing shit around your house with this thing.
What if the figurine of Goku was the thing that fixed his washing machine?
What if your washing machine knob is Goku's face?
Okay. Yeah. Think about that. Is now the actual reason to own a house for me.
My Krillin broke. Let me go forget a new one.
Forget the rack mount. So like, I guess our topic this week is sort of, we're just kind of going to look back. You know, we're all Whiskey Media alumni here. And we thought, you know, hey, that was a long time ago at this point. And why don't we kind of look back at like the tech end of starting that thing up and like all the kind of video production stuff we got into back then and like how things have changed. And
well,
I will say my memory is terrible, as people who know who I am and listen to me. I have a terrible, terrible memory, but I do love video production.
I was going to say we should probably explain this for people who maybe don't come from the giant bomb side of this family, because I feel like the last week in the Discord was probably really confusing for people who aren't super familiar with giant bomb.
Right. And even tested fans, there are people who didn't come along until after the split and the sell off.
Yeah. So when we started tested, when Norm and I started tested in 2010, we started it with this company called Whiskey Media, which at the time was, some ex CNET alums who had forked off from CNET and made this website called Giant Bomb. And there was Comic Vine and other sites as well. But the Giant Bomb community, where Brad and Vinny and Jeff and Ryan and, you know, later Alex and Rory came from, was formative for how we set up tested. Like we set up tested in the model of Giant Bomb. You know, we wanted to do editorial content and video content and have a wiki that had all the stuff you'd want to know about it. I'm not still bitter about that.
Did you ever get the
fuck? No,
I didn't think so. I'm sorry.
Somebody made one on Wikia and like that was the best we ever got. So
look, we're not here to open old wounds. We're here to salve them, to patch them over.
But I mean, the point of like our approach to video at Tested was directly shaped by what you guys did at Giant Bomb in terms of like, you know, thinking about how you can make the most content that's good with the least people and still maintain like the base level of what you want to do. And like the thing that was shocking to me when I came in there is that you guys were doing so much with like just kind of off the shelf stuff that was glued together in weird and interesting ways. And it wouldn't have been possible at any other point. Like now it's easy because we all have OBS and you can buy a capture card with 4 HDMI ports or whatever. But back then, capturing like HDMI was hard and we were all learning how to do that stuff. So it kind of made it up as we went along. So it was really interesting to me.
Yeah, you said something before this that like I knew in a general sense, but when you put a number on it, it really kind of blew my mind that the studio we had at the beginning of that thing, what did you say, like 10 years prior to Giant Bomb starting would have been like $1 million studio or something?
At least, I think. Right, Vinny?
Like it would have been in the hundreds of thousands. Well, to do. So should we just get into it then?
Yeah, let's get it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I should say that I was there for you know, I was doing the video production for Whiskey during a lot of that time. I had come from GameSpot before that, had done some production stuff, for TV, a little bit of independent stuff. So it's, you know, I got my start logging tapes, right? As a kind of assistant editor. Somebody bring
what does
tapes.
That mean, Vinny?
So that means that somebody comes back from a shoot and they give it to your kind of low man on the totem pole and you watch this, the tape with either a pencil and paper, or you do it in the program in Final Cut. And you like every 20 seconds, every, whatever, you're like, person smiles.
That level of detail. Holy shit.
Well, it depends what you're logging for, right? Like if you're wanting, need reaction shots or whatever, or like Will talks about how he worked at Whiskey. 0-10, 0-0, 1-0-2, you know, like, Brad then talks about, wow, is that really the level of detail? You know, 0-5, you know, you log it down. So you can hand it off to somebody who's going to do an edit, right? Mm-hmm. And be like, I need a shot. I need to know where Will talks about this thing. So that's where I kind of got my start. And then, went in from there. But, talking about the studio, two very big things happened. The equipment turned into computers. So So all the equipment that you used, the video switcher was no longer hitting a button that made two contacts join to push the video into something else. It was software happening that a computer was running. And so all of the things, the seven different things you needed to do, all got rolled up into a computer. And that also, if you're talking about smaller scale stuff, I'm sure in broadcast centers, this is not the case, but that meant you then didn't need five people as well. I think for better or worse, because everyone who's used a computer knows that it crashes. You're running all this software. Like when a video switcher used to crash or lock up, you were kind of stuck with the signal open, right? They had fail safes on good ones, and they, you know, these really expensive switchers that would be like, oh, okay, something locked up because it had this little LCD screen, and it would be like, it's frozen. But like you're still mechanically switching stuff. Now OBS locks up. Forget it. You got to reboot or it crashes and the stream goes down. So that stuff, you used to have a video switcher. You used to, or at least in the GameSpot studio even, because that was built out as a kind of broadcast studio. A video switcher, somebody with another computer that cost thousands, tens of thousands of dollars doing overlay graphics. Somebody had another computer doing audio. Somebody had another just a DVR doing video recording for the thing, making sure that's all going. And then there's another thing just doing the streaming. And eventually that all got rolled up into just a computer.
One box.
Yeah, one box where somebody was like doing the audio, even doing the audio. This was the last holdout I had was, I don't know if you remember, Brad, at Giant Bomb. It was Drew used to do the audio and one person would do the switching. It was the last holdout I had that was like, this is still a two-person operation. One person has to listen to the audio and one person has to do their thing. But
that's kind of the problem, right? Because like you can condense functionality into a box as much as you want, you know, like doing more with less is great and all, like squeezing blood from a stone, but like you're still one person with only one attention span and like one capacity to multitask, right? Like at a certain point, you've probably got more functionality than you can keep up with realistically by yourself, right?
The cognitive load is high.
Right. Yes, that.
Yes. Like you're, if you have a dedicated audio, it's always going to be better if you have a dedicated somebody, right? Even on the graphics front, even on titles, even on, you know, I would still never want to do a professional production as a one-man show. And even on something like a TriCaster or like, or in vMix, like there's too much juggling while you're getting the title set up. Somebody is tapping their mic or doing something, or, you know, you have to mute a mic or change a shot, or, you know, like you need a camera op to go in there and change focus or like, you know, go get it. There's a lot of people, and it changed. You know, it was funny, Will, you said this earlier of like, being able to do this from home. And I've always told people who ask for advice on this stuff. And my experience, people know tons more than me about the home streaming at this point, just chapters of books that I am missing. Yeah. But, one person is easy. Two people in the same room, exponentially harder. Like suddenly you have to split audio. You have to make sure mics aren't picking each other up. You have to worry about delay. You have to worry, hey, can the other person hear me? Maybe without hearing themselves. Like you have to worry about all this other, like putting your headphones on and hitting stream on your computer. Easy. Go for it. As soon as you have somebody else in the room, harder.
Well, I tried to do a show last year, maybe earlier this year. It's time is hazy, where we were playing a board game and I was trying to use NDI with Skype. Should be straightforward to pipe in everybody's headshots from Skype into OBS and then stream out this board game. And I could get it so that everybody could see everybody else and hear everybody else, right? And I could get all that stuff onto the feed, but the lip sync on the audio and the video was never right for anybody but me. And I eventually just stopped doing it because I was like, I need like, in order to do this realistically, I need like somebody operating the delays on OBS to kind of ride those delays as you're going. Otherwise, it's always going to be janky and out of sync. And you know, it just wasn't worth doing. And you're right. It's like one person, no problem. Two people, even like when I sit down with my daughter and we play Spelunky or something and we're both plugged into the same audio mixer and we have the same audio feed, no problem. The moment she wants her own audio feed so she can hear the sounds from her game and I hear the sounds from my game, I'm hosed. There's nothing I can do to make that work.
Yeah. Well, so even at that point, though, you have an audio mixer. So you're like, even for two, like you're already a step beyond the, you know, person who just has a computer and is like, how do I stream? Right. And then going from how do I stream to having somebody sit next to me and sit next to me and join me on this thing is like, oh, okay, now I need some kind of headphone splitter. Do I go in for the audio mixer? You know, how, you know, even doing this stuff through Skype is, or, you know, whatever, Zoom, whatever people are doing. I think everybody got a little taste of it during a lockdown and stuff where it's just like, you're muted. You're blowing out. Are you using the right microphone? Is the camera on? So I feel like everybody got a little video production taste of just like, you're cutting out. No, you stay away from their mic. I can't hear you.
It was like a whole second job for the first few months last year to just keep that end of it running on your own. Right. Like I was spending hours a week crawling around under my desk, like sticking cables all over the place and dealing with audio mixing. And it was a lot.
At the same time, like I loved watching like talk news, like Maddow and stuff, to watch them figure out how to do all this stuff that we'd been doing for years. Like it was so fun watching them figure out how to get I feel so bad for those production teams because they had to get people who have no technical expertise whatsoever and teach them how to turn on, you know, how to get decent audio out of AirPods and how to like white balance their webcam so they don't look like they're on the surface of the sun or something. And it was really fun. Anyway, we should get into like, you know, like where you guys started. Like I remember when I started in like early 2010 and we were still in the Sausalito office. You guys were kind of isolated down in the basement. And I was a little afraid of you when we first came in because I was like,
what?
Those guys, like I knew Brad and I'd like met Jeff, but Jeff was like this guy and I didn't know you at all, Vinny, and you were scary because you were Italian. You were from New York and you're like, you were very intimidating at that point. Like I would see you out when you were outside a lot.
I kind of felt the same way about the upstairs, to be fair. I think it was all the glass up there. It just felt very cold and sterile, but also that's where all the business happened. You know, it's like, I didn't want to know about any of that stuff.
I still have my leather jacket and, you know, I just kind of put my leather jacket on and, you know, back when I had hair, it was a much more threatening look. It took San Francisco to mellow me out a little bit.
Yeah. Like it would be 85 degrees outside. You'd be sitting outside with a cup of coffee and your leather jacket on. I was like, man, he just does. He's so cool. Like literally cool.
And I put my hand out and a yellow cab would just fly by. It's just like, wow, that's New York happening right there.
Yeah,
that first couple of years is when you taught me to drink coffee. I don't know that I would be a coffee drinker if it weren't for us taking that early commuter bus over the Golden Gate Bridge. Remember that crunchy granola market right around the corner from the office? They put soy milk in your coffee and like, we went, you know, I was not a coffee drinker until we were coming in early every day. And it was like, what else am I going to do at 9 o'clock here in the office? We're the only ones here except go get coffee with Vinny.
Oh, right. Because the commuter bus didn't run after like 8:30 or something, right? You had to be there.
Bus. Like it was like 8:45, I think, was the last bus over the bridge. So, yeah, that was the latest we could get into the office was like 9:10.
And then going home, I think that thing stopped at like 8 something. Oh, so like, God, that's me sleeping at the office.
I think it was 6:50, 7 o'clock, something like that.
Where it's just like, I'm stuck here. That's it.
I remember giving you both rides multiple times.
We live 2 blocks away from each other right on that bus route. And if you got that last like 6:50 p.m. bus, it was a 20-minute commute.
Yeah.
If you missed that bus, it became a 90-minute commute.
Yeah. Also, riding my bike.
Do you remember that time we missed the bus and we had to take like the long one? I don't know if I should mention this. We got on there. It was like release day at San Quentin.
Yeah, somebody and borrowed my phone.
It was a bus full of just released prison inmates and us. Yeah.
Well, look, they're on their best behavior.
Yeah, totally. They were in their sweatpants. They're all in like gray sweatpants. And somebody used my phone. It's like, of course, like use it, but like, you know, because they're calling to be like, hey, I need a pickup, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah. It was definitely like, oh, wow, we caught the after hours bus this time.
The pelican flies tonight.
It's like, I'm going to keep this number on here. Make sure they call me back. Thank you. Yeah.
Now you're so implicated.
I'll say the thing that's it's kind of a segue from what we were just talking about into the early whiskey days is video game capture and streaming, I feel like, has been kind of, and this is going to sound self-aggrandizing, but has been like tip of the spear on a lot of this stuff because nobody else in their right mind was trying to do like 60 frames a second on anything or low latency anything. Or why do you need to stream live with low latency? Like nobody else is doing this. So so you got to really buy gear that was like, and at the time nobody was making video game streaming gear. You're like, hey, what do we need to do this stuff? There was, you know, Elgato was, I don't even think it was around. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff was, we wound up, when I came in, somebody had purchased some gear already for the studio, green screen, this Aja IO capture box for capturing games. It was, none of this gear had been in GameSpot before.
The Mac Pro was there already.
I think the Mac Pro, one of those silver, you know, tower Mac
Pro. The cheese grater.
And I think a Panasonic HVX camera, which used the P2 cards, which were incredibly expensive.
Right, I forgot about those cards.
Hundreds of dollars for like a gig. I forget what it was, but it was like
18 minutes we could pack on one of those or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous.
They were crazy high resolution too, 720p.
I always thought it was kind of hilarious and like maybe a little reckless is maybe mean, but like I always thought it was funny that they went out and bought all the gear before they had a video producer to actually like dictate what the gear should be.
Well, they knew what they wanted to do. They wanted to shoot stuff on a green screen. They wanted to capture video games. And then, you know, we did, I think they had a lavalier or two as well. And it was a startup company. So it's just like, hey, we have some money. Let's go buy this stuff. And you know, what do we need? And so I think it was like the business person at the time going into a Mac store and being like, what do I need to capture? You know, like, okay, you definitely need this. You for sure need this. And so coming in there, it was great. You know, that stuff was great to use, but you know, the technology at the time was, what was that, Brad? Like PS3 to PS4 era?
Yeah, that was 2008. Time? So the PS3 was like only a year and a half old at that time.
Was it?
Like that's okay. Pretty early in that generation, like pretty early on HDMI even, because remember the first model, the Xbox 360, did not even have HDMI out. It was component was the best you could get for HD. So like we were early days on even like realizing the horror of HDCP and stuff.
HDMI was new when you guys started, technologically new, and probably like I didn't have an HDMI TV until like 2012 probably, or 2011. Like, wait,
did I get the timing around 2000? Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was about two and a half years from the 360, I think, year and a half from the PS3.
We were there, what, in like 2008?
Yeah, June 2008 is when we started.
So component. I'm gonna show my butt here a little bit. I am not a video engineer. I work in the trenches. I plug the stuff in, but I am fascinated by that stuff. So I have a very layman's understanding. Jan Ochoa, another Jan we worked with at GameSpot, was a genius when he came to that stuff.
Yep.
And I think he, I was maybe one of, I got this look from him as like, what are you doing? I think I was one of the first people to, when he would talk about that stuff, say, okay, what else? You know, like just, I loved listening to him explain what color spaces were and like why this works this way. So
he understood that stuff on like an electrical level, right?
Yes.
Like he knew exactly what signals were flowing through those cables and how they broke down and what they did.
Well, like how color spaces work, right? So like, you know, when you have a cable, when you see those numbers like 4:4:4:4, that's a 4:4:4 ratio. I'm sorry, I'm gonna try and get a little nerdy here, but like, please know that I'm faking it. So you have, and this is where my understanding is very layman. There's a difference when I say luma and luminance. Those are two different things. I think one is actual brightness. One is how humans perceive. It's like it's graded to perceive it. So the first number is your luma, right? Or luminance. I'm just going to use them interchangeably. Somebody else can correct me. And then the next ratio is your colors, the color space. So humans can see the difference. The way we're evolved can see the difference in brightness very noticeably. The perception in brightness, we can see a dimming light very noticeably, much more than we can tell color saturation and the difference in color. So that's why the first number is always 4. It never, you never compromise that brightness, and everything else is in ratio to that, compressed to that. So those things get compressed in ways that are, and alpha channels do this too. Sometimes you have a fourth number at the end.
Hold on. So, so what are the, explain the three numbers again. What are the three numbers?
Yeah. So the first one's your luminance value, right?
Okay.
And that's always like the four, right? And then you'll have like four, four, four means you have a, and again, as far as I understand it, a perfect full ratio. Nothing is compressed down. Nothing is in, nothing is halved. And this is like usually on like a horizontal and Y plane. So imagine, the way it was explained to me, and I don't know if this is true or not, imagine you have a Photoshop, a raster image, right? And it is, and you start with, it's 100 pixels by 100 pixels. Mm-hmm. Now you make it, you squish it down vertically so that it's 100 pixels by 50 pixels tall, and you render it again. Now on the other side, you pull it back up again. And now that you've then stretched these pixels out in a way
kind of lost information and then interpolated it back.
Yeah. So you've rendered it down and now you've pulled it back up. And that's why like DV is something like 411. So like DV, remember those little DV tapes?
Yeah.
And it was why chroma keying DV was a nightmare, because when you got on the other end, you had all these artifacts that would be around the edges of people, all this compression artifact, because the information, as far as I understand, the information was then kind of just not as clear.
So each individual number is basically a range of gradation for that category, for that bucket, right? So like the individual, form, that's the space you have to move the slider up and down in.
It's a subsampling. It's a ratio, and I forget exactly how it works. Why there are two numbers for the chroma space and why there's one for the luma space. But the thing about a composite video, when you talk about a composite cable, the reason it's called a composite cable is because it's sending the luma and chroma information in one signal. That composite cable has basically two pinouts. It's got the lead and the ground on the shield around it. So it's got the pin and the ground. An S video cable is basically just two composite cables together. One is Y, the chroma. And if you look at a pinout for a DIN on an S video, it's ground, luma, ground, chroma. So it's Y and C, right? So it's Y, ground, C, ground. So it's basically, they said, okay, let's split this up. So the way, this is like a really loose understanding. Hold
on. Just so people know, the composite is the old yellow RCA cable. Yes.
With the one plug.
And the S video is the one with all the like six pins or five pins inside it.
Yeah, I think it's six.
There's a couple of different DINs. It's like it's four pins in it. And then if you look it up, I think they probably show like, hey, then they added these, because there's just different stuff that they started sending. Like sometimes coming out of your computer on old cards, you used to have this S video cable that had like nine pins or something on it.
Yeah.
But it's basically Y, and it's chroma and luma are on them. And, the way this is, again, how I learned it years and years ago, so it's very loose, like on a composite cable, all that stuff's mushed together, but it's like it starts separate in your original thing. Then it all gets mushed, poured into the same glass, basically all these different things. And then has to get teased back out on the other end. And they're all at different frequencies, right? So you're kind of filtering out these things back on the other end, and it looks like crap on a composite cable. So what if we can separate the luma and the chroma? Oh, we did it. Now we don't have to tease them back out again on the other side. So then you get to component, and it's literally what it says. Oh, what if we broke out each component on a cable? So on a component cable, that's the three. That's the green, blue, and red, right? Yep. And that's usually on the back of something. You might see Y, PB, and PR, right? I don't know if you guys have seen that on the back of things.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
so Y is luma, and that's a black and white luma signal. PB is the blue, I think it's blue minus chroma, and PR is red minus chroma. So PB is blue minus chroma, PR is red. And then the green, this is why they're geniuses.
It's red minus luma, and blue minus luma, I think.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So it'll be red minus luma, blue minus luma, PB, PR, and Y. And then they basically get the green because they have all the other numbers. You can extrapolate what the green is by having it. It's what's left, right? Yeah. So you don't need another cable.
Incredible. Like that is.
Yeah. They're super smart. Yeah. They're like, oh, this is the other thing. So that green cable is actually the luma channel.
Okay.
Yeah, that is and then there are RGB cables and it's a little different, but like but that's component, right? So it's composite, everything is composited. Component, everything's a component.
So you can probably experiment with this. If you have a component TV still, you can experiment with this by plugging them into the wrong ones.
Yeah.
And like you'll get weird color shifts. Yeah. Because like yeah.
If you plug the green one in, you'll get a black and white picture only.
Yeah.
But you'll get the full picture. And some TVs also will say, you know, Y/ composite, because sometimes it doubles as a composite channel as well. If your TV can switch back, or at least they used to, I don't know if they do anymore. So that's the life of analog stuff. And that was great. I mean, there were problems. You have analog degradation over runs, you know, it's analog and that's where you get the monster cables coming out and be like, we're gold plated and you're going to get better connectivity because analog has a curve, right? You have like, oh, it's, you're going to get better signal based on the electronics in there versus digital, where you kind of have a cliff. It either is going or it's not going, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, analog, you'll get snow, you'll get kind of artifacts. It's like the cable's no good.
Those little lines that move up and down the screen sometimes, if like you move a magnet near the cable.
So I should say that the, and again, the people who are listening to this podcast are much smarter than I am on this, but there is also sync information being sent, usually I think on that Luma channel as well. So like you need timing information, horizontal and vertical timing information. So and that's like sometimes a little beat at the bottom. Anyway, that, and so then you have interlaced and progressive and all that stuff. But the thing in production that's fun with that is when you're doing production with those things in an analog way, your cameras are refreshing at rates, right? They're refreshing every time. And when you switch multiple cameras or feeds, they have to be refreshing at the same time. So you have to use a sync generator that plugs into every camera. It's a Blackburst for composite tri-sync, I think, for a component to make sure that everything, instead of being like, you know, AB, it's all A. So when you switch between shots, you're not caught mid frame on something.
So you AB, you're talking about like an interlaced signal, you're sending one half of the vertical lines, well, horizontal lines one time, one frame, and the other half the other frame. And you do that so you end up without weird interleaving and like those, like it looks like I don't know, it looks like cross, like the lines don't line up when you cut between frames, right?
Yeah. So you can get caught with a frame half drawn or something like on screen. And you see this in video games because they used to use this to good effect in those games of like, you know, if something's going to be semi-transparent, they would sometimes just draw half of it on the screen and like, and just be like, and now you see it now with digital stuff and progressive. It's like, this is not rendering correctly. Like this thing that was supposed to be semi-transparent is just missing half of it, or it's a block or something like that. Well,
we talked about this with Mike Micah last year. Cause like sometimes it's really weird. Like some of the old arcade console games, especially like, they expected phosphor glow to last between frames. So like, I think he said the waterfalls in Sonic are the classic example of like the water's moving and the transparency of that is entirely a process that happens on the front of the CRT.
Oh, that's great.
So like they hit it with a really high Luma signal on the waterfall, knowing that the fade would go last until the next frame.
Oh and my gosh. So you got like mechanical transparency.
Totally. And there's all this work on like the Mr. Project and emulation scene now to replicate that artificially, you know, because they can't rely on the physics of the screen to do it for them anymore. So they have to like code or kind of reverse engineer like a solution that makes it work in the way that it was supposed to on the screen. It's amazing. There is a a fantastic Twitter account called CRT Pixels @CRT Pixels. That is just nothing but exactly what you're talking about. It's side by sides of like, here is the raw pixel output of these old games. Here's a photo of it on a TV on a CRT right next to it. So you can see exactly how they were using like the phosphor glow and stuff like that to get like nice shading on stuff. Where in the raw output is just this kind of real ugly, like hard contrast. Like it's a great side by side tool for that stuff.
So I'm sorry if I got a lot of that wrong, but it is amazing to dive into like, the thing I always used to tell, like when I would sit down and sit with like Joey and Drew, and we go over stuff, I'd be like, remember, the cable is just a conduit. It is just copper in a thing. It's a passive cable. It is not doing anything magical. It is just, you are plugging it into a port that is sending something along pins. And on the other end, a device is interpreting that. As long as the pins line up, It is not an HDMI cable, a DVI cable. All of this stuff is not doing anything except transporting the information along the proper lanes. And, you know, because it can seem like, you know, there's something magic is happening in there. So, like, you know, you go from composite to S-video to component. And there is something easy to understand about, like, oh, you're just doubling the bandwidth by putting two cables. Now you're just, this is how we got to 720, 1280 by 720 from 480. You just added cables. Like, you just put more cables in there. And then when you get to VGA, which is another analog format, you know, that stuff starts getting a little more complicated because they start doing weird device control stuff on some of the pins. Then you start getting into weird things.
It's two-way. It's sometimes in VGA and stuff like that, right?
So, like, if you look at pinouts on VGA, you know, it looks like, you know, VGA is a D-sub. Is that the connector? You know, it's a little smaller, but there's a lot of pins in there. But a lot of those are ground. You know, don't forget you have a ground in there. And, you know, but you're still dealing with RGB, and you're still just dealing with sending color and sync information. I forget what the pinout on the D-sub is, but it's like
it's 15 like, pins, I think. I can't remember. Yeah,
they're all of them live, used.
Some of, okay. A lot of them are grounds.
So yeah, and you'll have like horizontal plus and minus and stuff like that. And then you get to SCART, and that's like a black box for me. Like SCART to me, if you look at a pinout of a SCART cable, we didn't have it.
We should explain what SCART is before we dive. Like SCART was a European standard that was made by some French. hold on.
Are you going to try it?
Yeah, do it.
The Syndicate des Constructeurs d'Appareils Radio Recepteurs et Télévision. So it's all the Frenchified Anglophile words. But it's the... I apologize. I'm so sorry also to any Francophiles or even people in Quebec who speak French. I know there's a difference there, but I don't understand it. Radio and Television Receiver Manufacturers Association is the English translation, and it was developed in the mid 70s. So it's analog, but it's terrifying looking from where I sit. And it actually kind of looks like the back, like the port that was on the back of like, what, the SNES and the N64. Like it's a wide, weird thing with a bunch of vertical pins in it.
Yes. And yeah, it's got a bunch of pins like 20 or 21.
21 pins. Yeah.
To me, it looks like technology from the movie Alien. Like it looks like the thing they should have been plugging in their computers on the Nostromo. It's like terrifyingly rugged and industrial looking.
And I never understood why we didn't get it here. Like it must have been money, I assume, or it must have been some kind of like, hey, we're not going to license this out. But like, it's kind of amazing. Like if you look at the pinouts on that thing, I'm not familiar with SCART much at all because I never had to use it, but it carries audio for the first thing. I should say all of these other things we've talked about do not carry audio. So like, if you remember, you had the yellow, the white and the red, right? And that was your composite set. And then you had your component set, which was also, you had your three red, green and blue cables. And then you had your white and red stereo. Unless you were some weirdo in the 90s who was using optical back then, you were using you know, white and red, and
your Toslink.
That's right.
Which is actually, sorry, it's the SPDIF. The Toslink was just the connector. My bad. Yeah.
Which is super cool if you could do it. I always thought that was for like, man, that's for the rich people. They got their weird fiber optic cable.
They were so expensive.
Yeah,
the fiber optic cables were so expensive.
Yeah, I think they were. This I don't know at all, but like, because I only looked into fiber stuff a couple of years ago again, remembering that's like, A, it's super expensive, and B, it is incredibly fragile. And I remember talking to somebody like, no, man, it's just like extruded plastic now. It's not like glass in there just, anymore.
Like, don't kink it and you're fine.
Yeah, don't do a 90-degree turn. You should be fine.
Yeah, they actually give you, they give you basically the angle, like the max sort of bend angle, because I've been looking at a lot of fiber for networking recently, and when you go buy the fiber, it's like, here's how much you can bend this and no further.
I did fiber for my audio stuff in the 90s, and like the cables were really expensive, but it was really nice because like you just plugged it in, like you didn't have to worry about whether it ran over the power cords or anything like that and whether it was going to pick up noise.
So, light pulses, man. Just light pulses.
No hum, no ground loops.
So SCART has audio in it. SCART has, from what I can tell from looking at pinouts, it can do RGB, it can do S video, it can do component. It's like all this stuff built into this Frankenstein connector. I only really started learning about SCART after being at GameSpot and Giant Bomb, where people were like, and it was mostly like the Peter Browns and Jeffs of the world being like, no, man, SCART. get, you got to get, you want the clearest picture, you, not as video, SCART.
Like, that was the thing, hanging out on, like, IRC in the late 90s with people who really, really fucking cared about the quality of their video games. Like, they were, like, modding TVs to their American TVs to use SCART, you know, like, modding SCART into American game consoles. Like, it's kind of, it always seemed like the sort of last video cable you needed until everything went digital, right? It was kind of the ultimate goal.
I never really used it.
It had a pin that denoted what the aspect ratio of the signal was, so that you could say, like, remember the anamorphic squeeze when you had a 4x3 HD TV that you could then send the entire pixel, the entire signal down and just have the TV render the black bars and have all of the video in those, all the 480p's were used for video, no black bars. SCART could do that without you having to do anything on the TV end. It was nice.
So I don't know why we didn't get SCART. I assume, again, some kind of licensing thing.
It probably cost 35 cents per TV to implement or something.
But like all these things also we should say are like, hey, this is all like you guys talk about this on the here, like your consortiums, right? Like you're different consortiums running the show. So I should say in this kind of analog world, this is all happening. And then also SDI is happening, which is serial digital interface. And that's a digital cable that was kind of used in the professional land. SDI is amazing.
SDI, it's the best, right?
SDI, I believe SDI to be the best. Now, so all of these other things, so composite S video component, those are the types of signals. The cable, it's not the type of cable or the interlock, the adapter. It's not the end of the cable, right?
Form so factor, like
the terminal. The it's not the terminal. Yeah. Yeah. So that's different. You have like phono jacks, you have whatever you want
BNC,
on there.
Whatever, yeah.
Banana plug if you want, whatever you want on there. So the BNC, which pick what you want it to stand for. I always went with British Naval Connector because I thought that was fun. But people, I've heard all different things throughout the years. I'm like, that's not true. It's not really that. BNC is this bayonet style locking cam style thing. If you ever put IKEA furniture together, it's kind of like that cam they use in there where you turn the screwdriver and it locks on a
peg. I almost died because of a BNC connector one time.
What? Because it pulled a piece of gear off?
No, because somebody had a ground loop floating over a 10Base2 network chain. And when I grabbed the BNC connector, it grounded me out and I couldn't let go of it. Like my hand clamped around it.
That time
I had to wrench my whole arm around to get the connector ripped off. It was bad.
So that is one of the things you will see as a con of BNC, which, you know, when you look up, like, what's the pros and cons of HDMI? Depending on your environment, HDMI will get yanked out of the console or whatever. BNC will pull it down on you. If you trip over that cable, that gear is coming down off the shelf.
There's no Xbox style quick release on a BNC cable.
That person will fall and that gear will come down. Something will give and it's probably not the connector. It slides in and locks in. So those have been on S video cables, not the DIN ones. They have cables that are S-video that will split into Y and C, and they have those bayonet style. Those have been on composite cables. I've seen them. I've seen them on component cables.
I have a set of component BNC cables in my garage old monitor I used to have.
So do I, actually.
Yeah. So SDI is one solid core pin surrounded by a shield. So it's got a ground and the pin and carries all that information on it. It has a bandwidth like any other cable. Now there's HDSDI up to, I want to say they're up to 12 gigabit at HDSDI with something on the horizon. Carries like 16 channels of audio, a pretty full subsample. For a while it was 422, but I think they can cheat it into 444 now. But I'm just going to get into this now because I feel like this is the thing. If you're in production and you're listening to this, it probably maybe waiting for me to say the reason I believe you have HDMI and that do you curse on this?
Please.
Fuck yeah.
That poo-poo connector is because copy protection.
Yeah, because, of course.
Yep. Because consumers and SDI, component, S-video, composite, those analog ones, and SDI, which is a digital one, do not carry any kind of handshaking between devices. It's one way. They do not transmit. There's no EDID. There's no like, there's no HDCP. You set what you want to send out of device A. It travels through the cable, passive cable, and goes into device B. Device B is not saying, what is device A? Device B is saying, I'm looking for this signal. Make sure device A is saying it. HDMI says, plug me in. I'll figure it out.
Hey, man, what you got?
Hey, what you got? Oh, you're trying to play Wedding Crashers, huh? Well, we're not. We're just not going to do that.
Your monitor is not compatible with our thing. You got dirty keys. We got to get fresh keys if you want to use your monitor here. If you read Boing Boing in the early 2000s, Cory Doctorow had strong feelings about the value of HDCP, and he was correct, because all like the sad thing about the millions of dollars, presumably, whatever the standards body that came up with HDMI and HDCP did. So they spent all this buttloads of money. And then like 15 minutes after HDMI TVs started shipping, some company in Taiwan was like, yo, dog, we got a splitter for this. And it strips out all the HDMI bullshit. It's $8. So the only people that HDCP inconveniences are the ones that like don't know to buy the $8 splitter.
So,
like, it's
so those
asinine.
Are not. So I learned last year, because we had a bunch of those. We bought a bunch of those exact $8 boxes to strip HDCP, and I had one here that worked for years and then didn't as of last year. Mm-hmm. Two months after work from home started, of course. So I went out to buy a new splitter. You can't get stripping splitters as easily as you used to. Like even the literal ones we used to buy.
Yeah.
You know, because they've got years old product pages on Amazon, right? So they've got years of user reviews built up on there, and like there's a certain point in those user reviews where they all flip and people are like, these don't strip HDCP anymore, stop buying these. I don't know what happened, but they no longer do that. Something changed on the back end. I don't know if it's like the consortiums and the corporations clamping down on that stuff or what's happening there.
The so HDMI is, so I think SDI is put together by SMPTE in their specs. It's a Society for Motion Pictures and Television Engineers, right? HDMI, they do not fuck around. Have you ever seen the HDMI? I forget the consortium. They have a list of banned companies on their website. You go to the site and it's like persona non grata. Like, these companies can no longer license HDMI technology because you are banned.
The HDMI Licensing Administrator Incorporated is what you're talking about, I believe.
Would it be by any chance the list of terminated HDMI adopters?
Yes, that's it. Yes, yes.
Dude, I can tell you that One Verge internet technology in Beijing was terminated since November 2017.
Yes, that list is like, it is the wall of shame. It is the do not serve list for, like, they are serious about their stuff.
You're not kidding. There are dozens of companies on this list.
It's like a bodega with like the bad check sign on the wall, man.
Sorry, Artec Incorporated, you're out.
Like,
they made my splitter.
dude, holy shit, EVGA is on this list.
You crossed the line. You are on the list.
I have a tech hole HDMI splitter right here, which is my favorite name for this, because it's like, yeah, man, we put your HDCP in a hole here, baby. Yeah, that's funny. I didn't realize that they were going after it that hard, but still, like, that stuff's still pretty easy to find. You can do it in software if you have the right stuff now,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just like, they are, it's just funny that they publish a list of just basically, that's like,
it's like the wall of shame.
F me, F you. You're on the list. You can't, no more HDMI for you. I should say HDMI in terms of video quality is very good. It has allowed for a lot of consumer electronics to push, you know, where we're going. I don't like the port. I don't like the connector. They have made, like, I think at least three or four different sizes of them. Those mini ones.
Yeah, there's standard. There's mini. There's micro.
The problem with HDMI, one of the problems I have is that the physical connector is only designed for like 100 insertions and removals before it fails. So if you're like normal people, this isn't a problem. But if you're streaming and you switch your PlayStation and your Xbox and your Switch and you don't have some sort of like, this is the argument for buying the physical switcher is that if you're unplugging and replugging all that stuff all the time, those like I blew out the connector on my PS4 Pro and like the solution was send it to Sony and pay them $200 to fix it.
I didn't know they were that fragile. I've been doing that a lot for capture.
So those ports are soldered in from all with all those pins, right? So every pin that you're putting into the port needs a solder point on a board, right? So imagine now you have 21 pins soldered to a board, and every time you stress that thing and you flex that port, it could lift or break a solder joint on that thing. So yeah, they you go in, you go out. It's also the problem with if you want to do runs of HDMI, and HDMI does not run well over length. It is like a, I want to say it's like 100 feet or something. You're at 100 feet, your cable's the size of your arm.
It's 10 meters, isn't it? No, it's 10 meters, I think. It's short.
Yeah, it's short. So SDI can run, I think, like 1,000 feet. I mean, you get it depends what you're sending, but like SDI is made for an industry to run long cables, an HDSDI. But like, you know, you guys have probably seen trying to get that long, you know, gauge HDMI cable where the weight of that thing on a port.
I had to buy a dongle that dangled down and put a right angle and a swingy thing on it.
Endless dongles and adapters and short cables and like swivel mount little doohickeys, kind of female to female and stuff from Monoprice for exactly that reason, because it's so easy to break that port with a heavy cable.
Yeah, so it stresses it. And that's trouble. So SDI, you know, I'm not just trying to blow SDI's, you know, game up here, but like, you know, they do a lot of the same stuff that HDMI does, without all of the extra talking to all the, you're not going to raise the volume on your other device through an SDI cable, right? It doesn't talk back to anything. It doesn't have ARC. It doesn't do all this other weird stuff. It sends the video, it sends the audio, it's digital, but it's also, like I said, one solid core. I have made so many SDI cables because you just buy coax and you make it.
We used to do it in the basement. We would have SDI cable making day, and you'd be running 50 feet of cables down the length of the basement, and I remember you taught Vinny and Drew, Drew and Joey and everybody down there how to do that one day. It was fun.
Because it's just electricity, right? There's no microcontroller or logic in there. You're just sending a signal.
Well, there's no logic in an HDMI cable. It's just 21 pins that have to be on tiny little copper wire that all have to be shielded from each other that you know, a robot can do, but you can't do, right? Like, the coax cable you're doing with SDI, I mean, I guess you could do it not solid core, but it's a solid core piece of copper in there that you put a little pin on, like a little nipple on it. You put a bayonet connector on it and you crimp it and your cable's done. It's like four pieces. It is the solid core. There is plastic shielding. There is then the foil for the ground and shielding. And then the black wrap that's around it. And that's it. Like
isn't there braided ground on SDI?
Yeah, it's like this foily shield shielding on it. It's like that, like, and that like tiny, that tiny thin little stranded wire, and like that just needs to touch the coupler. It's like a sleeve on it. So like if you break an HDMI cable, throw it away. Like you break an SDI cable, just snip the end off and put a new terminal on the end. Like you can do it fairly easily. I don't know if you guys have ever broken headphone wire, but like even opening up headphone wire with that thin, like angel hair copper that's filaments in there. Like I've tried it a couple of, where you take the X-Acto knife and try and split the thing down, and it's like a piece of string in there. And then like, and you're like, I just got to throw this away. There's just nothing I can do.
One of the hardest solder jobs I've ever done was the headphones I'm wearing right now. I accidentally bought some that didn't have ends on them. Like I didn't have it. Did like you can get it as like an XLR and a quarter inch, or like a you know the four pole like modern headphone adapter, whichever one you want. But I bought the naked one by accident that just had wires, and then had to buy the connectors. I was like, this is so like the headphone part of this is so delicate compared to anything I've ever soldered before, and it took like 3 or 4 tries to get it right. I ended up just buying the cables that have the right ends on them. Vinny, SDI sounds really good. Can I just get this on TVs soon? Is this like a thing I'm going to be able to buy and put in my living room? I need a TV.
Sweet summer child.
No, because what are you going to plug into it? Like, you know, so this is where it is not passive. You can buy HDMI to SDI converters. They're not super duper expensive, you know, but they're like $30 or whatever.
I remember they were really reliable and convenient back in the day when we were in the basement at Whiskey.
So you got to make sure that, you know, you're not passing anything HDCP, because if you don't want to get on the bad boy list and strip that stuff out, you know, Black Magic does not want to be on the bad boy list. So you cannot pass that stuff. You have to figure out a way to get rid of it ahead of time. But you can convert. Those are digital signals. HDMI and DVI use the same protocol for sending their signal. That's why you can have a passive HDMI to DVI adapter. It's okay. Passive. It's just they remap the pins. They get rid of a lot of the stuff that's just like, well, you're never going to use this on your DVI device, but they remap. Have you guys talked about the incredible world of DVI adapters here? Of DVI-I, DVI-A, DVI-D, dual link?
Not a ton.
We have touched on it, and the overall fragility of the DVI interface physical connector is one of my least. It is probably my least favorite plug of all time.
Will's not a fan. I have the DisplayPort tops my list of shit connectors personally, but I just found out recently that there are analog and digital versions of DVI, which blew my mind because I thought the D stood for digital.
It's the plus and the, yeah, and the vertical, yeah, tells you whether it's like. Let me tell you, reviewing video cards in the time of DVI gave me a deep and abiding hatred for DVI because the cables are always too fat, and all it takes is one slight fuck up to bend the pins to the point, mm-hmm, that, like, well, that cable's in the trash. Let me go get another one out of the bin. And yeah, anyway,
you're taking like a tiny little tweezer to bend that one pin back. So the DVI analog, right, it has that cross, right? It's got that sliver thing, and there's, yeah, four pins there, and it's just an RGB and sync pin that allows it to go,
okay,
to trans. That's all the analog stuff on that side. And then have you ever seen the one that looks like it has a gap tooth? It's just, ooh, like you're missing something in the middle, yep, here. So that's in the middle. There is the, I think it's called a dual link. They just basically, yep, to send higher resolutions, did it again, right? Oh, here's some more. And that it's, if you ever look at like a DVI to VGA adapter, it looks like it's even missing more teeth. It's just like, you know, it's, anyway, that's just DVI and HDMI. They use, maybe protocol is not the right word. TMDS, I think it is. I looked it up before just to see what it is. So, like, you know, these are digital signals, right? So XLR is using, or sorry, SDI is using something called, this is for you guys to look into. This is not for me. NRZI.
If you'd like to know more.
Yeah. Which is like non-redundant zero something, like to do its data. And then HDMI and DVI do a different thing. And then DisplayPort, I don't even know. It uses something else. I looked it up before the show just to see if it uses the same. And it's like ML Lane or something like that. When you look at pinouts.
There's no legitimate, like, the good news right now, at least, is that anything that exports a DisplayPort probably also exports HDMI. So you don't ever need to capture DisplayPort, because like DisplayPort is strictly for computers talking to monitors, and you shouldn't use it for anything else. Is my understanding, at least.
Yeah,
that's pretty much the case. Yeah,
I've never plugged a DisplayPort thing into a capture device in my life.
Yeah. I don't know that they exist.
Actually, I've never seen one, but I'm sure, yeah, there's probably some company on the bad list for HDMI that's making display capture DisplayPort.
I literally downloaded the 500 page HDMI, or I'm sorry, a DisplayPort 1.2 spec sheet to continuity test a cable a month or two ago.
I love pinouts. Pinouts.
Yeah, they're fun.
I love them.
Yeah.
Like, once you look at a pinout, the mystery starts going away.
Totally.
Like, yeah.
It really is just like, oh, this is silly. You're just doing a lead from this pin to this pin, and all you are is a silly little cable. You're just a highway transmitting this data. And as long as this one winds up from in New York to Albuquerque, this one winds up from, you know, Philadelphia to this, then we're going to be fine. As soon as you wind up from Albuquerque to Philadelphia is where the smoke comes out of the machine.
For better or worse, I think HDMI 2.1 is going to be the thing from now until eternity, or at least until there are 16K screens. Because I think it does like, what, 8K60 or something. I think point is we are stuck with HDMI for a while.
HDMI, it, like, Like I said, I think it brought consumer electronics. Like, they're short runs. They're supposed to be short things that go from your set-top box to your TV. That's it. Yeah. And plug it in. Don't move it ever. You're not unplugging this thing 100 times. We're the only fools who have 27 devices on our coffee table or our thing that have to be like, my TV has four. I've got this, you know, NES Mini. I've got my PS3, my PS4, my PS5. I need a thing. I need this switcher now that needs to make sure it takes HDCP, does 4K, has the right color space, is not limited, is doing full, like, we'll carry this, you know. HDMI has problems because it's supposed to be consumer friendly. And when you reach a point where you're like, I'm just want to tell you what to do. And that's a problem.
Brad, the solution to your, hey, I shouldn't be plugging in and unplugging my PS4 all the time, is to just have one cable for each device that always stays plugged into the expensive thing and then unplug and replug the cheap end. So, like, I have my tech hole that strips HDCP and splits out for monitor and capture card. I always unplug at that end. So I always unplug on the input of that. And then, like, there's a cable from the Switch dock. There's a cable from the PS4. There's a cable from the Mister, and those don't get unplugged.
Cause I've probably plugged and unplugged my PS5 HDMI like 2 dozen times already since I got it. And I feel I've like burned a quarter of my budget. That thing's going to die. This has made me realize I've got an unused splitter just sitting here that is going in that chain, like, right after this.
Yeah.
So. I have, for work, when I'm playing a game, I will not move the PS4. I will use a PS4, my old PS4, which is by my capture thing, until I have to bring the PS5 down. Like, if I'm playing a thing for work, or what I used to work, just to avoid having to unplug it, because A, I hate unplugging stuff, because I like neat cable management, and you can never do neat cable management if you're ever unplugging stuff. Like, that is a... That is the bane of cable management.
There is some Moore's Law style ratio of, like, how tidy your cables are to how much of a pain in the ass they are to work with. I'm not quite sure what that is yet, but I've definitely been exploring it.
So if we went back to whiskey, that was us trying to, if we go back there, working in the analog field for a long time, and we crossed over into the digital realm with HDMI stuff. And it was a headache. It was going from component. I was a holdout on component for a long time because.
So did that happen at Giant Bomb? Like, I was trying to remember. Yeah. Like, were we capturing mostly component for the first?
We had that. We had the breakout cable because it got around the HDCP stuff that the PS4 introduced.
PS3. So I just learned that in the last year as we've been trying to capture stuff at home here, is the PS3 has HDCP that cannot be disabled. Like,
yeah,
right. I literally looked it up in the Elgato knowledge base, and the page for PS3 was just, you cannot capture a PS3 with Elgato hardware. there was no way.
I remember the PS when the PS4 and the Xbox One came out, the console before the current one, but after the Xbox 360. When it came out, they both had switches in the UI to turn off HDCP, which meant you couldn't watch any Netflix or anything on those boxes. But holy crap, it was easy to capture them all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yep.
The other thing, I don't know if you remember, was it EDTV? Like the half step between SD and HD. And it was like, so 480p.
Is that 480p? Okay, yeah.
Sucks. It's not, I don't even think it's a SMPTE standard. It's like, I think it's invented. Like,
SMPTE is the standards body that determines resolutions that are standardized around the world.
So, a lot of our capture stuff, like when the Wii was like, hey, 480p, it would be like, I don't know, well, you sending me two 480 signals? I don't even know what you think you're doing. And it'd be like, all right, set it to 480i, and then I'll deinterlace it on the back end. Like, it just did not work. And the other thing that would happen with old consoles, I'm pretty sure they would send 240 lines progressive.
That's what the NES does, the NES does. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, nobody likes that. No capture gear likes that. So you had to run it through, like, basically the trick used to be put it into your camcorder and then take the video out of your camcorder, because that would turn it back into a 480i signal. Because it could read what was coming in, but it would put it back out. So we used to have these little clamshell at GameSpot, these little clamshell DV decks that you'd have to put the old console in and then take a video out over S video. So moving to HDMI stuff, Our cameras were still SDI, and I love SDI, and our switchers were SDI, and we stayed as long SDI as we could until basically they got rid of all the component ports or breakouts of stuff. You know, and eventually the signal is clear. I mean, HDMI, a digital signal is going to be clearer coming out of that console than an analog signal. So it was better.
You can't, you know what, eventually you can't fight progress forever, even when it's backwards progress.
But in a production environment, you want your audio separated from your video. Like, you want that audio going into your mixer, and you want your audio mixer, you want your video going into your video mixer. HDMI carries it all, and it's a digital signal. So now you have to strip that audio back out if you want to get it into your analog audio mixer. And to this day, I have not seen a thing that a mixer that will take an HDMI signal, give you the audio, and then pass back through the HDMI to continue on its journey to your video mixer. You know what I'm saying? Like, basically HDMI ports on your audio mixer to say, hey, if you can plug in your PS4 to this audio mixer and then pass it back through, and it's just a bridged connection that's no latency, so I can take the audio out. And I don't know if that's because it's part of a spec of separating out the audio or what, but like, we just
they don't want to be on the bad list.
Yeah, you don't want to be on the bad boy list.
That's it.
But maybe they do have them. I looked for cards even for mixers, because they would sell like basically the equivalent of like PCIe cards you could put into mixers of like, hey, you can plug this Ethernet in or digital or that stuff. You know, I mean, there is digital audio. Yeah, it's HDMI for production, pain in the booty.
It's really funny because like in the 10 years that I've been doing this, or 11 years that I've been doing this now, I remember I went to CES one year, NAB, and asked about like capturing old console hardware. I was like, hey, your card doesn't support NES resolutions. And they were like, well, why the hell would any, that's a 30-year-old game console. Why would anybody want to do that, you weird pervert? And and now it's like, you know, there's people who spend their entire productive adult careers capturing and playing old NES games.
It's a cottage industry. Like that new RetroTINK 5X just came out, and people are like losing their minds over it because it's a fantastic way. In like
8 minutes. Yeah,
totally.
I remember talking to New Tech and I remember talking about something of like, hey, when are you guys doing 1080p 60? And they're like,
yeah,
the demand's just not there.
God, that's a rough. We were on that 720p TriCaster for so long.
Yeah.
We have tested still had that until real recently. They used it for a lot. We used it for a long time.
Well, broadcast was on 1080i. You know, they did interlaced a lot. And 1080p 30 who's doing 60 frames a second progressive? What are you doing over there? I mean, what are you, the NFL? Like, what do you need this for?
You doing tennis? You got the tennis?
Like, are you doing slow motion replays where you need to have like every frame there? And it'd be like, no, I'm playing. We want to play the new Call of Duty. Record it. It doesn't look right.
You remember the drubbing we took from people for years for not moving up to 1080p 60 because they were looking at the consumer hardware that was coming out. You know, like Elgato got to 1080p 60 before New Tech did.
Yeah,
like before, right?
Before like Blackmagic did. Like,
right. People just could not understand. Like, there's consumer hardware on the market that does this, but we're not using consumer hardware in this elaborate studio. We need like broadcast stuff in here.
Can we talk for a second? This is one of my favorite things, and I apologize for the background noise. My neighbors are doing construction today, so there's like weird compressor noise occasionally. But can we talk about bit rate versus resolution versus video quality and if one goes up, the other goes down. There's an inverse relationship between those. If everything else stays equal, that I think a lot of people don't understand, and they just look at the player on their video on YouTube or Twitch or whatever, and they see, dude, this isn't 1080. What the hell, man?
Right. So you can have a 4K stream at a garbage bit rate, and it'll just look like four blocks moving around on a screen, right? Even though the resolution, the size of the frame is fine, the pixels should be there, but the bitrate's terrible. So the information,
if the bitrate is low enough, it'll just be macro blocked to hell, and it's like worthless to have a four. It's the bitrate is basically just a budget, right? It's a data budget. It's how much information per like unit of time that you can pack in to give detail to the frames, right?
Well, yeah. So there's resolution, there's bitrate, So resolution is the number of pixels on the screen, you know, 1920 by 1080, 2160 by, or 30, whatever, four times that.
3840 by 2160 is 4K.
Thank you. I never can remember that one. There's bit rate, which is the number of bits per second. There's the codec, which is also important because that's like H.264, H.265, MPEG-2, which is the amount that the data can be compressed and retained in quality.
So generally, yeah. So generally, newer codecs, you will get better visual quality, like perceptive quality at the same bitrate number because they're more efficient. But
that comes at an expense of computation per second on both the sending and receiving ends.
Right.
On the on the packing and unpacking. They squeeze it. They squeeze it even tighter. And it's just like, how fast can you unsqueeze it? And your computer's going to melt.
So like Twitch, for example, if I think you're not supposed to send more than 6,000 bits per second.
Yeah. For partners, it's 8 megabit or 8,000 kilobit. I believe regular accounts are limited to 6. I think that just goes up if you get partner status.
I send 10 and they don't complain anymore.
So I've done that. We've experimented with the stuff a ton over the last year. I was trying like 10 and 12 and it would accept it. But then I would look at the player on Twitch and it was busting it down to 720. So it was like letting me give them a higher bit rate, but it was not letting me put out the full resolution. It was a weird thing.
The thing that happens is their encoders they're like transcoders don't like that. So if you have somebody who's connecting with a worse connection or is on mobile or is on a TV or something that doesn't support those higher bit rates, then those people's experience suffers. So that's why it seems like 8 to 10 is the sweet spot if you want to cheat a little bit, but not too much.
And then there's also the haves and have nots situation on Twitch, right? Of you don't get transcode like quality settings unless you're partnered, I believe. Is that the split? Like
as a streamer.
Yes. Like you have to reach that tier, that elite tier to offer people like better quality options.
Yeah. There's hundreds of thousands of partners. It's not like it's super elite these days.
I know, but it is something. Do you guys, I don't know how deeply you want to get into this stuff, but like, do you guys have any idea, like, why is RTMP still the thing? Because it's like a dead protocol. Why do they still only accept
RTMP, Brad?
That's the, we've mentioned codecs. We have not mentioned protocols.
Yeah.
Codecs are the thing that compress the signal, like the image, right? Like that's the thing that makes the high quality video lower quality with the benefit of being smaller. The protocol is sort of the pipe or the wrapper that the video that is compressed by the codec is packaged in and sent across the internet.
That the codec's in,
Like the protocol is essentially how the video stream is sliced up into packets. Like in what way is this continuous stream of data turned into slices of data that can be sent in a piecemeal fashion, right? So like RTMP is what, an Adobe protocol?
Is it owned? Is it proprietarily owned by Adobe?
I swear it was developed by...
Hold on. While you're looking this up, I have a metaphor. No.
Macromedia developed RTMP. That's how old it is.
So it is owned by Adobe then.
But it's like the thing I read, I think, is they ceased development of it in 2012.
Well, everybody has it. You know, like you just want that SRT. That's all.
There's all kinds of better stuff, man. There's before Mixer went away, they had their own protocol called FTL that seemed very good. Like there's just better protocols and better codecs out there than what is generally in use today. And I don't know when we're going to get to the next step.
So, you know, a thing to remember about this stuff as you expand into data centers and places that are doing all of this stuff and you're sending your video is they have invested a lot of money on a certain technology and they build out those data centers, and the cost to then bring everything out of RTMP into SRT is extraordinary. I don't know if you could just do a software update and do that. I don't know that information, but like, you know, these things are happening on computers that are, you know, in city blocks, you know, these Amazon data centers and all these things. You got to tell them to be like, SRT is better. Be like, how much is it going to cost? Well, we basically got to upgrade every machine. You know, also there's overhead, you know, and all of that stuff.
Well, especially on the codec end, there is actual hardware there that you need to be able to compress and decompress that stuff. And on top of their infrastructure needing to be upgraded, they also have to support a user base that might be using like pretty old hardware, right? Like
definitely
not everybody is capable of sending H.265 in real time to Twitch. So they do have to accommodate a lot of like a broad range of people.
Well, and often there's trade-offs. So like if we switch from RTMP to SRT, then like that might be easy and fine. But if we switch codecs from H.264 to H.265, the real-time H.264 encoders are pretty good. I have no idea what the status of real-time H.265 encoders is. So you might go from like having, you know, 30 milliseconds of latency or 300 milliseconds of latency from like stream to Twitch to having 3 milliseconds of, you know, 3 seconds of latency or something, you know.
The modern NVIDIA cards with NVENC support do H.265 very well, but that is to my point that a lot of people, especially right now, nobody can buy those damn things. Like,
well, that's just, RTX cards that support H.265. I think the
2000 and up, but that's the point though. Like, a lot of people don't have those cards, so they don't have that capability. So I guess, you know, I get why they don't make the investment to support that stuff yet, but like,
which you can't lag behind too much. Like, as you get into 4K and more people, or there's an expanding ceiling, right? But the floor stays the same. So you have to serve everybody, right? Yeah. And that's where like HLS streams come in, which are basically like, hey, we'll auto detect what your bandwidth is here, and we'll try and serve you the appropriate version of the stream. We'll bust it down. But you know, the thing that some people who just consume this stuff don't realize is to say, we could talk about this explicitly because we deal with it, is when we move from 720p to 1080p, Will was just talking about bandwidth and kind of data rates. A higher data rate means more information, means that file is bigger. You've just increased your storage, your computational overhead, and the amount you have to crunch, like you just said, Will, like on making that thing low latency before you can spit it out the door. You can't send videos coming out uncompressed. You then have to put it into a compressed format to send it to the internet. So you got to take something big, make it small, get it out there. And then the other side has to say, all right, what am I doing with it? And all of that takes more time with more data. But as people are like, I want 4K, you now have a bigger picture frame. You need a smaller paintbrush to then fill in all these little dots. So you need more data, right? Your palette needs more paint on it. If you use the same palette you were using for 720p or same amount of paint, like Brad was saying, you're going to get big blocks everywhere, right? So it's like, okay. And there are acceptable, or there are terms that recommendations for what your bit rate should be if you're a 1080p, what your bit rate should be. And you can go underneath those and try it. But like, I'll take a high bit rate 720p signal over a really low 4K signal.
Absolutely. Like, dude, I often think that the people asking for 4K streaming out there don't realize they're getting into like a be careful what you wish for situation, because like, I don't have 4K Netflix, but I see a lot of people saying like, it's not great. Like,
it's not great.
The bit rates on their 4K encodes are so low that it kind of looks like shit, and it's kind of not worth the extra pixels.
Well, and there's another thing too, especially if you're talking about streaming games, which is what we're primarily focused on here, I think. People who are playing multiplayer stuff at a high level are not ever playing at 4K. They're almost all playing at 1080p, running as fast as their computers will run, because it turns out, you know, click to frame latency is much more important than having four times the pixels on the screen in terms of being competitive in, you know, Call of Duty or Valorant or Fortnite or PUBG or whatever the game is. So like, if I'm streaming PUBG, I think I would actually rather have 1080p at double the frame rate so that people can see closer to what I'm seeing, rather than, you know, having interpolating up to 4K or something stupid. And them then getting, you know, four times the pixels, but also like eight times the noise, because, you know, you're trying to do more data in that same pipe.
I really feel like 1080p 60 is such a sweet spot of quality and kind
for
of
now
bandwidth requirements that like, I could almost see us getting through most of this generation with that still being the standard for streaming, right? Like, I don't know when or if 4K is going to be the default on things like Twitch and YouTube.
The other thing with video games that are, and again, going back to video games being the kind of amazing source of all this technology, is like, nothing is as ridiculously dumb as video games on a compressor. You have things on the screen that are static and never change. You have HUD items. Then you have somebody looking at a thing, and then a split second later is whip panning the camera around, and then stops again and is like, okay, now I'm looking. Oh no, I got whip pan back this way. Oh, explosion went. Like, it's like having, you know, a movie just be a first person running scene the entire time, with somebody once in a while stopping, having like HUD element. Like, the compressor freaks out. What a compressor ideally wants to do is be like, I'm going to look a couple of frames ahead. I'm going to set a marker here. It looks like you're all cool. I think we have everything on. This is what we're going to work with for the next couple of frames, because how fast is this going to change, right? And you have things like B frames, I frames, P frames that are just like, I'm going to take the average here because, you know, I'm a smart compressor. And in a video game, one frame to the next is a completely different set of pixels. It's unfair
Well, but I was going to play. We ran out of time yesterday because we watched a bunch of old videos, which turned out to be the best thing we could have done.
That was awesome.
But I was going to go for that Geometry Wars achievement that still eludes me one more time. And I was excited to play Geometry Wars, but I was most excited about throwing that fucking game at the video compressor one more time. Because yeah. That thing is Geometry Wars is like the Widowmaker of video compressors.
Oh God, it's a nightmare. I mean, but so to Vinny's point that like the compressors can't predict what's going to come next in the frames. The weird thing is that the video cards and the renderers in the games are actually doing that work. So like, you know, one of the ways that like temporal AA and like the look ahead prediction works on stuff like VR is that the game is setting up all the potential, like the view frustrum that the game is considering is way larger than what it actually renders because it has all the other stuff ready in case the player does turn, you know, does a quick 180 flip. So like that information is somewhere inside the computer, but getting it from the computer to the video pipeline, there's no technology for that right now. And I guarantee you that there are people at NVIDIA and AMD thinking about that and how to integrate that stuff with OBS so that like right now, if you're a professional streamer, you probably are doing a 2PC setup right now because you want to offload the thinking work. You want to offload the CPU work and the compression work to another machine, but I would not be surprised if in the future OBS starts talking really closely with the video driver so that you can have more of that. Here's what the compressor should expect in the pipeline at some point in the future.
But the hard part though is like the human is the wild card in that, right? Like the renderer can put all the buildings there and like off screen and say like, hey, okay, this NPC, this character, but the compressor doesn't know if you're going to be looking at the bottom of somebody's shoe or at the top window. So what pixels are going to be there? I mean, we probably all stream enough that it's like you set that thing down to like keyframe every two frames, right? You're like, hey, compressor, you need to just put in a hard reevaluate everything every two frames. And like when you're doing a talking head interview, you could keyframe that thing like 30 seconds and that person is not moving. I mean, you've probably all seen weird that like compression artifact where like somebody stands still too long and then they move and you get that ghost image.
Yeah,
it's because, you know, the compressor was like too late catching up. It was like, slow down. Poor compressors on games. It's race car games. We always used to racing games. When we capture those, we put the bitrate up and put everything up because of the constantly blur on everything would just get chewed up and particle effects games like that. I'd usually capture with a different codec because I'd be like, okay,
no kidding.
Yeah, because this is like, I want a ProRes 444 on this. I can't use like a H.264 compression on this one. It's going to get too chewed up. I need to start with the highest source material and then bust it down later. That used to happen also on 3DS captures because the text was so small on that bottom screen, it would get chewed up in the compression. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, and then the other weird thing is that also our brains adapt to the compressors over time. So like if you go back and watch MPEG 2 video now, it looks really blocky and weird because of the way the psychovisual, because that stuff is all tuned. It's like, you know, MP3s are psychoacoustic, right? They take out the stuff that most people can't hear. And that's how they reduce that file size. The MPEG 2 through H.264 and H.265 and all the stuff that's coming down the pipe does the same thing. Like they're trying to take out the things that we don't notice by focusing on the parts of the frame that you're more likely to be looking at and stuff like that. And their strategies for it have evolved dramatically so that like there used to be, you don't used to see a lot of like dithering and stuff on MPEG 2 video. We don't see that anymore. And when you go back and watch an old DVD, it really jumps out now. And the same thing's going to happen with MPEG 4 with the way the blocking happens and the weird edge noise. And like Vinny's moving around on our screen right now. And like, there's this, it's like a glitch effect where he's moving and his hat is having trouble with the luminance of the video. Cause it's black and black and black and black and black. And like eventually our brains just don't see that anymore. And so going back and watching old compressed digital stuff, it's weird. And we're going to have this happen for the rest of eternity.
Yeah. And that's the crazy thing to think about how long ago we started that site. You know, I downloaded a couple of videos from the first couple of years in the basement this past week, just out of nostalgia, and they're 360p. Like, yeah, they are 640 by 360. Like, that's the biggest size we have because that's what we captured and compressed. That was the pipeline back then. Like, it's just how far we've come.
And there's all the weird, like, I remember I started right around the time you guys started doing TNT at the very, very in the basement still. And we didn't have a video switcher then. And I remember you had to, when you switched from like, whoever was sitting on the couch introducing the show to capturing the footage, you literally unplugged and replugged the component box. Yeah. So that, and there was always like AV sync drift at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So like you, when you came, I remember you came up and you talked to the business guys upstairs and you were like, we got to spend an insane amount of money, $25,000 on this TriCaster.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, what the hell is this thing do? We don't need to switch cameras. That's, you just do video games. And they're like, look, we're going to be able to not have it drift sync over the 3 hours that we do these ridiculously long shows. And they're like, oh yeah. Okay. That's worth 25.
Those capture things did not like you yanking out a cable and then plugging it back in. They were, there's timing happening there, right? They're sending timing signals and like you would, yes, it was definitely not happy. When we got that, we rented one for the big live show, the TriCaster.
Because we had ordered and it wasn't available. Like you ordered and it didn't get here in time. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like, I remember Tom from, not Geelers.
It wasn't Snader, was it?
Yeah. Snader. Yeah.
That's who you were working with.
Right? Yeah. Tom, had to like go to Vegas and get a floor model and it came in this like bulletproof case and like, you know, it came in hot and it was like, what a mess. That's when I broke my eye. It was just like a mess of things. Am I so stressed out? And, you know, we had to like figure it all out and get that thing going. And you know, it was great and weird, but man, that was a very stressful point in our production career.
I remember Tatum came in and was like, hey man, we want to do this 8-hour live show. And we're like, are you fucking out of your mind? And then we figured it out and it worked and it was really good and people loved it. And it was like a different thing that I had never seen on the internet before. So that was really cool.
It was super like we happened to just get, I mean, this is a whole other show probably because it's more on the back end, but like we were lucky enough to hit when Justin TV and YouTube and all this technology was converging in a way where the YouTube limit of 5 minutes of video, it lasted a while, but like we were on Vimeo. Where were we putting our stuff?
It was 15 when we started tested.
I want to say it was 10 maybe. 10.
Okay.
I think it was, I might be wrong, but I was also trying to remember the Justin TV backpack stunt happened while we were at Giant Bomb, right? Like it was.
I thought he came into the GameSpot office. I can't quite remember.
I might be misremembering, but it was right around that time, right? Where like that was sort of the, in my memory, that was the genesis of live streaming on the internet. Was the Justin TV guy going around with the backpack, right?
I didn't see the backpack until much like the Gunrun backpack that I saw was like Comdex 1 year, CES 1 year. It was late.
Okay.
Like so there was the bespoke handheld thing that was good for like 20 minutes that he had for a while. But then there was the one that became a commercial product that had like four cellular modems and all that stuff.
I'm talking about the bespoke one, the we have cobbled this together with our bare hands and we have accomplished this and check this shit out. This is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Ryan McDonald rented, it was like the Homer Cam was a backpack that had like basically four or five cell cards in it. And like, you're just bonding cards and looking for who's available is convention floor. You have an AT&T card in here. We got a Verizon card, whoever can get signal. And that stuff was wild. And then, then Justin TV was happening and then they started their gaming thing, which was Twitch TV. Mm-hmm. And then Justin TV is just gone now, right?
Gone. Like that's, okay. I mean, I wonder, let me see if it, redirects.
If you email somebody who's been at Twitch for a really long time, their email address is still at Justin TV.
Oh, that's funny. That's amazing. Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, Justin TV is not going anywhere for me. I don't know did they shut that down?
I mean, the emails still work.
I assumed it would redirect to Twitch, but it doesn't.
So that was all happening. And that was amazing that it was happening at the same time.
At some point, not now, maybe as a patron episode or something, we'll bring you back, Vinny, and talk about some of the like the weekly live shows. Because that to me was like that was the trial through fire that made us all men.
Yes. Yeah, we won't. Thank you so much. I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your very first Saturday
post
employment that you should be spending with your children to talk with us. I will say real quick, I think Ustream is one of the ones we were on for a while.
Oh, okay. We used Ustream for a while.
But, and I was using a Sorensen squeeze to compress those things into FLVs at the time to get them
get
up
those,
there.
That flash layer video, baby.
I want to apologize if I got a ton of stuff wrong to people there. I would love to talk about it. I love talking about this stuff. I miss being able to talk the tech side of the video. It's too complicated now for me. Like the HDMI and DisplayPort stuff is too complicated and has gone in a direction that it's all digital and handshaking and stuff, but
we would love to have you back. I mean, I love talking to you about this stuff, and also I think this is a side of you that people have not gotten to see that much of in the past, you know, like you.
Yeah,
I love this stuff. I love making cables. I love soldering cables, like audio cables, video cables, tip ring sleeve, tip sleeve. Give me what you got. I'll do
it. How many crimpers do you have in that basement right now? You got a BNC crimper?
So I don't have time to say this. When I was in the studio packing it up and I was like, should I bring this coil of SDI cable and these crimp? These are such nice. These crimpers are so nice. And this cutter for the SDI cable. So nice.
Oh, it's a spinny one.
Yeah.
I love that one. It's so fun.
It's got like seven blades. And I was like, nobody's ever. And then I was like, Vinny, what are you going to do with this? You don't need this. You're never making an SDI cable at home. What are you doing? So it's packed away in cold storage. So
no one is ever going to use that crimper again.
Gosh, I have like semi-fond memories of being at E3 and being like, we need a 15-foot SDI cable. How quickly can I make it? Get in there, do it with like a pocket knife and like, you know, that stuff is
I loved cable making day. Was really when you got the snake and we did the cable making day in the basement at Whiskey, it was really fun. Like I got to come in and pretend I was a network guy again for like 20 minutes and it was a good
making
time.
Network cables.
Last thing I want to say real quick for the next time you come. Yeah. You were talking about cable runs. You're talking about fiber optics and, you know, it's just light and it can go farther and stuff. That networking cable I've been looking at.
Yeah.
They measure the potential run length on those cables in kilometers.
That's very far.
Like you can buy You can buy shit on Amazon now and granted the hardware to send and receive it is astronomically expensive.
Hey, Brad, do you know how far apart we live from each other?
Go on.
Kilometers.
Go on.
Did you know that the power lines are public right of way and anybody can theoretically climb up there and put lines on them?
You're not serious.
Don't say that. You dangerous.
That can't be true.
Yeah. Public right of way. It's public infrastructure.
That cannot be true. Are you serious?
We have to get permits.
Dude.
We could have a direct fiber run from house to house.
Much to discuss.
Wait, you're implying that you could run your own cable from line to from tower to tower?
What the fuck do you think Comcast does, Vinny?
Dude, there
I
are
thought
people,
they lease it.
There are people out there in rural America founding their own fucking fiber ISPs at this point because they can't get anybody else to do it. It is a wild world out there.
Like, this is America. Gosh. This is, how do you think America was made? Do you think Rockefeller asked permission before he started building railroads? No. He was like, hey, I'll give you $5 for a space 20 feet wide for your land.
None of that captain of industry shit. We were done.
Well, thank you. Thank you again for having me. Thank you so much. And again, apologies. I'm sure on the Discord and stuff, please feel free to correct me on any of that stuff. Like I love it. I'm a layman on it, though. And that means that I've only used it. I only study it when something's going wrong.
That's fine.
Yeah. No,
that's fair. That's how everybody learns this stuff for the most part. Vinny, this is the part of the show where you plug something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What do you got to...
Like, what do you have to plug? You got anything? Are you on the twitch.tv?
How does that feel?
You got
feel?
A Twitter?
TikTok? So let's say. I think I'm at Vinny Caravella on Twitter. You can come check me out on there. I have an Instagram, which I think is at Vin Caravella, which I post to. You can see me post some woodworking stuff, painted miniatures, home projects. Twitch. I think I'm at or a Mind Cavity.
I think that's right.
Maybe I'll do some streaming next week. I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'll.
What else you got to do?
I don't know. Streaming to Twitch. Maybe I'll. I got a couple of games. I like Returnal. Maybe I'll stream that and.
I really want to play that.
Dude, did you wake up this morning and just like still find yourself in work mode? Like the first thing, like I said to my girlfriend this morning was like, hey, okay, you know what? Here's the stuff I'd like to get done this weekend before Monday.
Yes.
And then I was totally. wait a minute. What the fuck is Monday to me now?
Like, yeah,
I was like, wait, we have to go record a podcast with Vinny. This is Saturday, the day after our last day at the, on the job. And I'm like, dude, wait, what? Saturday is more of a work day than Monday is going to be. Like, what is this?
It's the first day of the rest of your lives.
Let me just say also, thanks for everybody. I'm sorry to co-opt this, but thanks for everybody reaching out. And the sentiment has been very lovely. I love that.
I will echo what he is saying. This has quite literally been the most touching week of my entire life.
Yeah, that's been pretty great. And I'm going to echo this here. I'm excited. I am not retiring. I'm excited for whatever I do. I wish I could retire, but like, I'm not retiring for many, many, many years. And I'm excited for whatever comes next and whatever that is. And thanks for people who have been so supportive and wishing me the best and excited with me as well. I'm sure, Brad, you share that same sentiment.
Absolutely.
There's a thing that happens when you make a big change where, like, normally and you're in the kind of jobs that we've done for a long time now, like the people who are the most engaged often are the, like, they love what you do and they care enough to complain about it. And it means that as a result, you feel like you're just constantly getting yelled at by people who are upset, disappointed in you, which like, I realize it comes from a place of good intentions, but poorly executed. Right. But when you change jobs like this, that's like the tip of the iceberg. That's like the 1/8, right? When you have this moment where something big changes or something happens, you have a kid, you change jobs, whatever, like the other 7/8 that like love your work and don't complain all the time, they're just like quietly enjoying what you do, come out and tell you that they appreciate you.
So nice.
And it feels really good. And I'm so happy you guys got that this week. And it wasn't just people yelling at you and being pissed and wanting to murder you. So
yeah, it's been super nice. The other thing I'll just say about that, just because I don't have a platform anymore, so thanks for letting me co-op yours, is, I think, Brad, you and I probably share this, very loyal to a job in a way that makes me not feel comfortable doing anything else while I'm at the job. Right. And it's been an interesting thing thinking about, like, oh, I can go on other friends' streams now and like not feel weird or like I'm somehow subverting what I do or the loyalty is misplaced. Like, I can go have fun with these friends and people I love and known for years and not feel this conflict that it's wrong, like, or that it's misplaced. And like, that's been kind of eye opening as well.
You are in control of your own destiny.
I love it. I love to go play some Destiny.
Don't do that.
Don't play Destiny. Yeah. This is the part of the show where we thank our fabulous patrons and everyone who supports the show and shares links, like tells their friends about us. We've had a lot of lovely comments about how much people like the show this week. We love that.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you to the supporters of this show for making, like, you have given me the courage and the confidence to feel like I could make some changes in my life as well. And it means the world.
That's so good. Thanks to our executive producer tier patrons, the Bunny Fiend, Jacob Chappell, new executive producer tier, Twinkle Twinkie.
Oh my God. Thank you.
And James Kamek. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. Thanks everybody in the Patreon community. If you subscribe to the Patreon and you're not in the Discord, you should get in there because there's awesome conversations happening every day about, like, we talked about parenting. I talked about parenting stuff this week. We shared a lot of Giant Bomb memories this week. It's been like part, like, I don't want to say like group therapy, but it's been like a party and celebration all week as people are sharing the things that they loved, and it's been really positive and great. We still don't have any mods, which I think maybe we hit. Oh, also, Brad, we hit 2,000 subs this week.
Oh my goodness.
So thanks everybody for backing the show.
Scene drama.
I know we have to do it now. Scene, it's going to be a couple of weeks, so don't. It won't be next week, but we got to plan it out.
When you hit 3,000, right? That's when we do our Gundam thing. Vinny and Will made a mech pod. Right?
Look, Vinny, I got my first Gundam this week.
Uh huh.
I don't know what the story is, but he's red and he has like spiky shoulders. He looks pretty cool.
Yes, he is very cool.
He's high grade.
Does he have a cape?
No,
he does not have a cape.
Only the coolest mechs have capes.
Look, one of my favorite things, Vinny, is the kits that people make that are like LED kits that you can put in like Star Wars ships and stuff like that to make them lit up and look really cool, like the actual big models that they made. So, you know,
I'm excited for you. I'm excited. I've got a pile of Gundam over here as well.
So So yeah, that's my project for tomorrow after Mother's Day celebrations are done, when Gina's taking her celebratory Mother's Day nap, is to clean off my desk so I can do some Gundam streams next week, maybe. So anyway, Vinny Caravella, thank you for coming by.
Thank Brad you. Shoemaker,
always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And hey, welcome back. Welcome in.
Welcome to the first day of the rest of our lives.
Yeah, welcome to the new real, I guess. Yeah.
Thank you, Vinny, again so much for
pleasure. Thanks
this time.
For having me.
And for everything over the last 13 years.
You're very, very welcome. Thanks for everybody for supporting me.
Okay. We'll see you all next week. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Oh, wait. I didn't tell you where to get the page. You can sign up for the Patreon at patreon.com/techpod. That's it. It's patreon.com/techpod. We'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.